The following talk was given by Steve Hagen at Dharma Field Meditation and Learning Center in Minneapolis on August 14, 2022. This talk may not be played or reproduced for profit.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good to see you all today. Zen is not about making you feel good or making you feel better. That's not it at all. Zen is about, if it's about anything, it's about just returning to sanity. It's about returning to sanity, but it's about relinquishing opinions, relinquishing beliefs. This is returning to sanity. To the extent that we hold ideas, beliefs, opinions, whatever, in our minds, if we believe in the veracity of these things, well, we're kind of out of touch. We are out of touch with reality, because you can't hold reality in your mind. You don't need to. It's being lived out. Nothing could be more immediate. But it's not a form thing that you pick up and hold in your mind. To the extent that we pick up things, ideas, thoughts, and hold them in our mind, to the extent that we're lost in that, we're completely captured by that, and we think that we've actually gotten hold of something here, this is insanity. There's no reflection on what we're doing and realizing what we're doing. And we can allow that then to completely take us away into the crazy human world. The human world doesn't have to be crazy, but for the most part it is, because so many of us are just caught up with what we think. It's not a matter that, well, you shouldn't think or you hold a view or whatever. It's just that don't hold it to the extent that now you think it's true, you think it's real. Reality isn't like that. It's not an idea. It's not an opinion. It's not a thought. It's not an explanation. It's immediate. It's dynamic. Really can't say anything. But here it is. And it's a matter of just waking up to this, realizing this directly. This is all. This is it. We hold a view here and there. It might be handy and useful in some limited way, and that's perfectly fine. But then let it go. Or at least be careful and watchful that you're not mistaking this for what's ultimately true and real. You just only need to lose sight of that. So Zen isn't about, the focus here isn't, sometimes people will take up meditation. That's what Zen means, really, meditation. With the idea that, well, I've got to calm down, I've got to relax, I got to feel better, or maybe I want to become enlightened or something like this. But it's not about that. If that's your concern, you're going to remain caught in views and grasping, forming yourself and I and me, and I want this, I need this. Just look at that. That's all. Just look. Don't judge anything here. Just see that for what it is and realize this is what you're doing right now. Maybe, if this is what you're doing in this moment, wake up to that. That's all. But Zen is about returning to sanity. Just start to see what's going on there, how you're carrying on. And recognize that for the insanity that it is. I'm using the word insanity as just really being out of touch with what is actually taking place. which we are ignoring when we're caught up in, basically, the concerns of me and what I want. What I want to get out of Zen, or why I took it up. I don't remember why I took this up. I don't even really feel like I actually took it up. I just sort of, at some point, realized that this is what I was doing. But if you were to ask me now, why do I sit in meditation? And this is a practice I've been doing for over 50 years now. There probably was a time when I could have told you. But now, that kind of a question, I can't even make sense of it. Why do I sit in meditation? It isn't like I need some reason here, some justification. That's the problem, you see. We even thought that somebody asked you why, and you maybe hadn't even really thought much about it, but then you supply an answer, and all of a sudden that becomes the thing that you're going to stand behind and defend, and this is your explanation. And you don't need to do that. I have no explanation. And it doesn't mean I don't know. I know full well. I don't know what I refers to there, but the knowledge or realizing of what this is, and to be fully engaged with it, as you can be in any given moment, it's full understanding of that. It's not mysterious. But there's nothing I can say. If I said something, and then I'd have to defend it. If somebody were to challenge it. And all of this is to disturb the mind, grasping something. You don't need to do that. And yet, it's like in the case of carrying on practice of meditation, just go ahead and just do that. You don't have to have some reason or explanation handy for when your relatives or your friends or whatever might ask you. There's a deep, quiet knowing that is already available to you right there. Just settle down. If you don't busy yourself with trying to come up with something here, you'll taste it, you'll see it, you'll feel it. You'll realize there's knowledge. I say you, but again, that's part of what we start to realize. You doesn't exactly refer to anything. So what are you going to say in regards to that? When you see, there's just this. Immediately, just this. And we can sit down in this and be still. And know. So this is what Zen is about. It's about returning to sanity. It's not about concerns for, well, then I'll feel better, or I'll get this from it, or that from it. That's just our usual way, which encourages and keeps going the dissatisfaction and dis-at-easement, and is that a word? I don't know. Dis-ease, yeah. That's right here in what I'm going to be looking at here in a second. But in view of what I've just said now, maybe it'll give us a little turn our attention to this these passages here. I'm going to read a little bit from the Xin Qing Ming, Trusting the Heart Mind, Trusting Heart Mind. But in view of what I've been pointing to here this morning so far, let's take a look at some of these lines here. If at any point you want to, I'll say something about each line or couplet or maybe a few lines together, and then I may or may not pause, but I'd appreciate if you don't interrupt when I'm talking. But before we move on to another verse or something, if you have something you'd like to say or ask or observe or whatever, feel free to just cut in. That applies to those of you out there in Zoom land as well, so. And Jose can let me know, I think. I can't see you. I'm assuming you're out there. But, okay. So let me just read on view of this. Zen, this is about returning to just being sane, present, here with reality. It's not about clinging to views and and opinions and thoughts and things of that sort, which is where we normally are. And again, it isn't like give up all your views. Well, they might be useful in some limited way, but just be aware that this is useful in some limited way. Ultimately, it doesn't really reflect what's going on, ultimately. But this is what we want to know. And you do know, you do have this knowledge of direct reality. It'd be impossible to be without it. Just a matter of waking up to recognizing, you know, what your true mind is. Okay, so let's just, in view of all of that, let's just kind of look at these lines here again. I might jump around a bit, I don't know. There's far more here than we could possibly get through in an hour here. But it begins, the great way is not difficult. There is nothing it prefers. Sometimes this is translated as, the great way is not difficult for those who have no preferences. And that's fine. It sounds better. It sounds more graspable, and it is, and that's why it might be a little bit more comfortable for us if we read that translation. And it's a fairly popular one. But if you go back to the original Chinese and look at it, Chen Cang, the author of this, the third patriarch of Zen in China, he's saying something close to, the great way is not difficult. There is nothing it prefers. Kind of erase that word, it would be helpful as well. But it's not a matter that this is the great way is not difficult for those who have no preferences. See, immediately we want to tie it to something that I can identify with and grasp. And again, that feels more comfortable, but you see, what you're doing at that point is you're the usual thing, which you're hanging on to yourself, which you have no knowledge of, and you think you know what that is until you start looking at what you mean by myself or something of that sort. And you realize that you're not going to get hold of anything there. But if we then cast everything, particularly with Zen reading, there's a mistake here, cast everything in terms of me, well, that's fine. You might feel like you're understanding things now, but there's a deep, subtle understanding that you already have. You don't have to go looking for it, but you're burying it. You're distracting yourself from it. So you're less likely to just wake up to it. And this is what we have to let go of. So we get into sometimes this uncomfortable language. What exactly is he talking about? The great way. The great way is something that could or could not have preferences. Here it says a weird way that, you know, there says has no preference. Well, there's nothing it prefers. It's just that what this is talking about is mind, and a great mind, full mind, mind with a capital M, reality itself in totality, all of this is the great way. And being the great way, there's nothing outside of it. There's somewhere in here he shows us that or reminds us of that. There's nothing lacking, there's nothing extra, he says. This is the great way. And this mind is your true mind. It's not yours, though, of course. That word you or yours is problematic again. That's holding an opinion, a thought, a view, an understanding, a grasp view of some sort. And now we approach language like this, and we're going to misinterpret. We're not going to quite pick up what it is that Chen Cang is saying. And again, Zen is not about holding views. It's about relinquishing views. It is about coming back to your natural mind, which is reality itself. And it isn't you. Okay, so then coming from this very spacious place, which isn't really coming from anywhere in particular, the great way is not difficult. It doesn't fight with anything. There's nothing outside of it to fight with. It doesn't fight or take favors among the various things that are taking place as the great way, such as you or me or a Dharma field or anything else you want to name. There's no fighting going on there, not in the great way, in the mind of the great way. And there's no reason why your own personal mind can settle down to a point where it's none other than the great mind, the one mind, the great way. But so it's just reminding that, and the great way is not difficult. It also says in some translations that it is without difficulty. Yeah, there's no difficulty there. There's no fighting that needs to take place. There's nothing it prefers. Only when you neither love nor hate does it appear clearly, without disguise, this reality. It's what is truly unfolding right here, moment by moment. It appears clearly, it's not disguised, it's not hidden, it's not kept from you in any way. It's just available to us to see immediately. In fact, you do see it all the time. It is impossible to set your eyes on what is not true and real. Now, there are a couple of things here that are going on. It doesn't mean like anything you look like it's true. I'm looking at this booklet here now. Well, ultimately, no, that's not exactly. There's all kinds of problems with a sentence like that. I am looking at, you know, a book here in my hand or whatever. This isn't actual seeing. This is how we conceptualize the world. This isn't perception, though. This isn't how we perceive. Of course, there isn't any we that does the perceiving. But there is the immediate direct perceptual experience, which is reality itself. But we chop it all up, you know, with consciousness. There seems to be things formed here, and of course, along with that, here I am. Well, it's just through the working of mind, the functioning of mind itself, but it looks like everything is kind of broken up into this and that. And now we see things in this term. You know. But if we see the great way directly itself, it isn't exactly like this. So there's nothing it prefers, but it's only when we neither love nor hate. Well, when is that? Well, it's when we're not grasping. When we're not grasping because we can see that there's nothing to grasp or to favor over this or that or the next thing. It is all reality. There isn't some part of it that's better than the other. Well, maybe in some limited way this works, functions better than some other whatever in the same thing. You know, if you need a wrench, well, it'll probably work better than if you had a screwdriver or something like this. But apart from those kinds of distinctions, ultimately, they're both necessary, or at least handy. There's no point in fighting over anything of that sort, or anything else that's appearing here with this, including other people, or yourself, other religions, or Zen centers, or whatever it is you want to put in the frame there. No point in what? Just disturbing your mind needlessly over this or that, to put this one ahead of that, or this one's bad, we got to destroy it, it's wrong. The things we endlessly do. This is to not recognize the great way. That is just simply thus right from the very start, right from the very beginning. It's what we... If we open our eyes and truly see, this is what is there to be seen. So only when you neither love. Now, so then in looking at it this way and seeing it in this way, there's no need for this love. Oh, I love this. I want this. And I hate that. Let's get rid of it. This doesn't go on in the mind of the great way. And there's no reason, well, that your mind, to use these terms, limited terms, also kind of false terms in a way. But there's no reason why this mind of yours that you're grasping and holding to and identifying with cannot settle down. Cannot settle down. To the extent it settles down, it resembles the great way, the mind of the great way. And with this, then we can find this. Only when you neither love nor hate does it appear clearly. This reality appears clearly with no disguise. There's nothing hidden about it. the various things that get broken out, including yourself or any object or thought or feeling you might want to identify. There's all kinds of hidden stuff there. You can only know so much of it, and there's other aspects of it we don't see. Or maybe we go digging for things and try to look at them a little differently, and then we see a different view or something of this sort. Yeah, well, the stuff of the world that comes and goes, it's born, it dies, it endures, it seems to endure for a time, and then it goes. And all of this stuff is taking place. It isn't that this is wrong or bad or it's a false or not true. Or whatever. It is a kind of truth. Yeah, we call that relative truth. But ultimately, it's not really what's taking place here. And we can see this. Because it's not hidden, it's in full view. We can see this when we learn to, well, just let the personal mind drop away. Then it appears clearly. It's always showing itself clearly. Reality, truth, Dharma, with a capital D. And it's without disguise. Can't be hidden. Can't be distorted into looking like something else. Whatever distortions we might create, well, that too is what's taking place here. And it might have this or that appearance, but like all appearances, it's not really back. It's not. There's nothing substantial behind it. But then he says, a hair's breadth of difference. We see these distinctions, and now the distinction, the difference here is that we take it to be real. That there really is, ultimately, a true and real difference between this and that. We don't see it as all just of the great way. Of mind here, with the capital M. We see the differences. And of course, for each of us, you know, me, I'm one of the distinguished things here, one of the differences that's appearing here, along with all these other things. And that becomes very real for us, compellingly real, these distinctions, way beyond the level of the reality, which is to appear in totality as appearances itself. We will see them as substantial and separate things, including myself, me, for each of us. And others too, others who will attach to, and others who maybe we don't like so much, and, you know, all the other stuff that goes on with it. Which isn't to say that you can't have warm feelings, you know, for someone, or maybe not so warm. But these things are all coming and going, and we can see that as that, because that is the true nature of what's taking place. And with that, we don't need to be so tossed away. And the mind can settle again, which is really to return to some kind of sanity here. Okay. But a hair's breadth of difference. So if we see this difference and in our mind, there really is a difference here. Ultimately, there's a difference. Now he says, in heaven and earth are set apart. It is a complete difference. Now this kind of setting apart and all that, of course, this is only taking place in a confused mind. In a diseased mind, which is what we're coming up to here. But it's not part of the mind of the great way, just simply, there might be these appearances, but the great way isn't of this nature, isn't of this sort. If you wish to see it, he says, then hold no opinions either for or against. If you wish to see reality, the great way, to know this mind, which beyond the fact that there's true knowing of it already, it's not your knowledge or my knowledge or Buddha's knowledge or anybody's knowledge, as if we were holding an idea or something like that, an opinion. That's part of the whole entanglement, the problem. There is just a direct knowing, realizing. So he says, if you wish to see it, you want to realize just this, just the reality itself. With a true realization of that, there won't be this unbearable suffering that we experience as human beings. because we can awaken from that kind of confusion. So if you wish to see, if this is where your heart is, you want to wake up, then what he's saying, and here's pretty direct. It's nothing confusing here. Take it to the heart. What is he saying? If you want to wake up, in effect, is what he's saying, then hold no opinions either for or against. To see everything with an equanimous mind, that's a word, isn't it? I think, what a balanced, even mind. Yeah, well, this is what you need to do, to hold no opinions, either for or against. Now, this might take I don't want to spend too much time on any one point here, but there's quite a bit here, but there's holding no opinion. You might think, well, you can't do that. Yeah, well, with our ordinary mind, no, we can't. We do have opinions, you know. And some of them are very stark, and extreme, even. So how can you just hold no opinion? Well, what you can do, what we can wake up to, is to see the vacuity of whatever the opinion is. That ultimately, it can't be distinguished and separated out as its own thing by itself, separate. Either harmonizing with others or in conflict with others. And we can begin to see this in some ways. Now we can begin to see that, well, some kinds of activities or whatever, instead of having the opinion, well, that's wrong and bad. That's not very helpful. And then this one's good over here. So there's our problem. How can we take care of that? I hope, did I say enough to give you a sense of what I mean there? So there's good, this is good, and I see this as bad. If what we want, if we wish to see it, we want to settle down, we want to wake up, to see the mind, to realize the mind of wholeness and totality, which I said is already available to you. It's truly what your mind is. But if we want to wake up to this, to realize this, then sorting things and with the opinions into good and bad and right and wrong, not helpful. The great way is settled. Why? It's because it's totality. It's not out there fighting with anything. It's seeing things in totality. It is taking a wholesome view, we could say. And we can do this, a view of the whole, seeing things in terms of the whole. The awakened, people who do wake up to this, they never lose sight of this. To the extent in this moment one is awake, you haven't lost sight of realizing things in terms of wholeness, as opposed to what maybe we can say is unwholesome, where the mind is divided, setting one thing off against another. The Buddha spoke of this early on, early teachings there in the Dhammapada. I've given this to you many times, the 183rd verse. The Buddha said, do what is wholesome, avoid what is unwholesome, what is broken up and scattered, one thing vying against another. Do what is wholesome, avoid the unwholesome, purify your own mind. This purify your own mind is just what we're talking about here, to hold no opinions, to not hold them, to think, yeah, this is good and this is bad. We can see that, yeah, this isn't very healthy, this isn't wholesome. We can see things in those terms. No, that doesn't mean, no, the wholesome isn't gonna go over there and start crushing the unwholesome. That's not, wholesome is right there with the unwholesome. It's not something separate from that. It's the all-embracing view, the wholesome. Buddha says, turn your mind to that. Recognize this. In any moment of judgment that's taking place in your mind, if you can stop and check, is this really coming from wholesomeness? Or is it coming from a divided mind that's viewing that other as evil and bad, needs to be crushed out, killed, whatever? Just be aware of this. But this is to purify your own mind is to have an all-embracing, taking an all-embracing view and moving in this direction. And why? Not because it's better or it's good. That's what we're looking at here now. That's not helpful. And why isn't a very good question either. But this is, so instead of why, like there's some reason, because this is still going to be dividing things. Let's look directly at what we're talking about in here. This is the wholesome mind. And this, as I mentioned, this is what the awakened don't lose sight of. They wake up to this, and once you wake up to this and you can really see it, you might momentarily lose it, but you can come back because you know what you're looking for now. You're not really looking for anything. It's always here. But you can remember, you can come back. And this is what we can begin to learn to do. Come out of a wholesome mind. And the reason for this is, if you have to have a reason or the why or whatever, is that this mind in and of itself is already settled. It's a settled mind. The mind that has no preference. And with that settled mind, what this is the mind of reality, of wholeness, totally settled. And to the extent that you're watching your mind, recognizing how you're getting caught and with this or that, settle down and just look at this. And you can look at it in totality, out of wholeness. But there's no intention to drive that away or to kill this or whatever. And you might think, well, yeah, but that really is bad over there. Yeah, but to go directly after that and to try to kill it, you're using the tactics of that way right there. Drop that. Recognize what you're doing. This is how we can quiet and settle even that unwholesome activity or thought or whatever is taking place there. It's done in that manner. It's not done through fighting it or countering it in some way, but through embracing it and taking it in. The natural tendency for anything is really just to move toward peace and wholeness and totality, because we can never leave this, actually, ultimately. It's a matter of just simply learning to settle down. So when the Buddha said, okay, to do what is wholesome, avoid what is unwholesome, purify your own mind, watch your mind. Then he said, this is the teaching of the awakened. This is what the awakened teach. This is the Buddha Dharma, teaching of the awakened. It is just simply this, in a nutshell, there you go. That's one nice, succinct little teaching that we have, right there in just that one verse from the Dhammapada. But then he goes on, he says, yeah, so if you wish to see it, then hold no opinions either for or against. And this, you know, the way to settle that issue then is to start looking at this in terms of wholeness. And also you can stare at the thing that you want to grasp. Just keep staring at it. Don't say anything to yourself about it. Don't judge it. Just keep looking at it. Whatever it is, a thought or a feeling or an object or a person or anything at all, a rock, I don't know. Anything, a cloud, but just keep looking at it, and it will show itself as insubstantial. Excuse me, I don't mean to say insubstantial. It will show itself to be non-substantial, that it doesn't belong to this world of substantiality or insubstantiality. It has no realness of its own. No self nature of its own. This you can see if you just look at whatever it is. You have to just look and not engage. Don't get yourself entangled. Don't do the usual thing and start analyzing and thinking, yeah, but, you know, and remembering what I'm saying. Yeah, but Steve said this, and I don't know if I, you know. Just watch that mind. And take whatever little nugget you want there and just stare it down, and you realize it's. What? It's nothing. There's nothing It's a made-up thing. This is insanity. And this is what all this insanity of mine is rushing about and screaming for this and that and fighting and one-upping and trying to get the best and stay away from that and, you know, all that stuff. This is insanity if you look carefully and bring it down to the elements of what it seems to be consisting of. Everything will show itself to be nothing at all. Nothing you can ever get hold of. If we really see, if you see this, if you allow your mind to follow it that far, to trace it that far, you can begin to see this. And that can have a profound effect on how you're conducting yourself. So he says here, so if you wish to see it, yeah, then hold no opinions for or against. Then he says, to set what you like against what you dislike. So here we're back to that grasping view now. You know, I like this, I don't like that. But he says, to set what you like against what you dislike, he says, this is the disease of the mind. I've seen other translations that I like pretty well too, where it says this is the mind's worst disease. I don't think Sensan actually quite put it that way, but this is the mind's worst disease. Yeah, it's a pretty bad disease, all right. But I want to look at that word. Disease is, or disease, you can break it into dis-ease. Yeah, it just puts the mind ill at ease. To set what you like against what you dislike. Just look at those things. Don't say, you don't have to, in the thing you like, you admire, whatever, but just kind of, if you can, dispassionately, just look at it. And the thing that you don't like, same way, just look at it. And when you see the non-difference between them, where you can really embrace them all. Oh, and by the way, too, I've told the story of the young man on the bus who there was a belligerent fellow who was going around and he was drunk and whatever and punching people and things and insulting them. And he was going to take him out. He was going to fight. He's the wholesome and he's going to, the good guy, and he's going to fight the bad guy. But of course that doesn't, it just goes on and on and on and on. That's where we are most of the time. But then, you know the story, but there was an old guy on the bus and he just said, he embraced the belligerent fellow, the fighting fellow, the drunk fellow. And everything changed on the bus. It all just settled down. So he was finding that way out of wholesomeness rather than out of separation and division, you know, the unwholesome. And same thing here, to set what you like against what you dislike, yeah. This just puts the mind ill at ease. And of course, then we act out of that, just make that even stronger. And it perpetuates itself, you know, until you just stop and recognize what you're doing. See what you're doing. Don't judge yourself. Don't say, well, yeah, but they're doing it too. Don't play those games. Don't do that stuff. Just see it for what it is. You don't need to blame yourself. We're all caught up in delusion, you know, until we see what we're doing. And so you can't blame yourself or anyone else, no matter how far gone they are. And we've seen in the news some examples of how far people can go with their insanity. But then he says, I probably should end it here pretty soon, but not knowing the profound quality of the way, not knowing the profound quality of wholeness, totality, where nothing is left out, nothing needs to be added. Not recognizing this, not realizing this quality of the way. He says, we disturb our original peace of mind, which is this wholeness, this totality, the great way. We disturb the original peace of mind to no purpose. We might feel like we have a lot of purpose to create this disturbance or that, you know, some real intention here, some good reasons. But ultimately, no, there's no purpose behind this. And the great way actually acts out of that, acts out of this, we could say, realization of the purposelessness of trying to accomplish this or getting this done, and that in totality and in wholeness, that's not really not necessary. It is all being done anyway. But we can let it be done of the whole and not out of the part or the broken out thing, whatever it might be. Okay. And then he says, perfect like great space, the way has nothing lacking, nothing extra. And I probably should end it because I'm using most of the hour here. So maybe, but I hope maybe that might help you to see this piece. It's a wonderful piece. There's a lot there and a lot more we could explore. Any questions about? Nobody interrupted, I don't think. I didn't get any. Yes, Mary.
So in that last couplet that you read, not knowing the profound quality of the way, we disturb our original peace of mind to no purpose. But we do know the profound quality of the way. We just ignore it. Is that correct?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It is impossible to be without full knowledge of reality. Well, this would get involve quite a bit for me to say, but I almost was going to say something that would throw you off, I think. Consciousness and mind are of a nature that we, here in the West particularly, we don't seem to understand, particularly those of us who seem to think that it's brain-based or matter-based. This is complete nonsense, and I could, at some point, I might want to give some talks on this to show you that. This is why we have the so-called hard problem, for those of you who might know about the hard problem, as to how do you get subjective experience from matter, basically, you know, and what it comes down to. And the assumption is that we do it because the brain produces, that's because everybody believes that, most everybody. But nobody's been able to even come close to demonstrating that. And there's all sorts of things that can be pointed out that will show that to be utter nonsense, and I'd like to give some lectures on this at some point, maybe. But that's in the future. But why did I get onto that?
My question?
Yeah, well...
not knowing the profound quality of the way, we do know the profound quality of the way.
Yes. Oh, yes. Okay. Yeah, so we have the... It isn't like we have, I have this knowledge, you know. It isn't... this knowledge is such that with the realization of this knowledge, the world isn't broken out into me and others, and or for you, you know, the same thing. Or, you know, it looks that way. It seems this way. We better not ignore that it appears this way, because there's all kinds of problems that come with that. So it isn't like throw away your normal take on reality. No, you don't need to do that at all. But you can wake up to what it is that you already know about this reality. And that in those series of lectures I'm thinking I might want to do. That's what we're going to be exploring. We'll explore what it is you already know. So it isn't like I can point out things, I think, I hope, this is what I'm working on to see if I can do this. Point out things where it's just, yeah, you see that. It isn't a matter of you have to believe it or something. And it is, like on the basis of the example I often use for stuff like this, the tasting of the orange juice. It's not a matter of me convincing you of the taste or you know, explaining it to you or, you know, in a way that, you know, you can understand it and that sort of thing. It's just simply a matter of if you've tasted orange juice, then there's immediate knowledge. And in that same way, we know reality. It's not an idea. If it were an idea, a theory about reality, well, now we can argue with it and it'll never be resolved. That's where we are with everything, including the idea that the brain causes consciousness. Well, that's a good one. We can spend from here till eternity, I guess, working on that one. Because that just simply isn't what's going on. What is going on, it's clear and obvious. It's not hidden. You know. Then why don't we notice it if it's so clear? Because it is extremely subtle and, can I say extremely immediate? I mean, it's just immediate. And quite subtle and utterly profound, but this is why we miss it. And we have a huge distraction of all the things, these physical things around us and other people and our feelings, our emotions toward them or toward just beautiful sights, sunsets or whatever. It's just endless. But this stuff seems compellingly real. So we easily go there. But we can see that, you don't have to destroy it. You can't really do that anyway, the appearances of things. But we can see, we can stop misjudging or misunderstanding their true nature, which is that they, whatever is appearing here is non-substantial, meaning it doesn't have any kind of selfhood, own being, svabhava, of its own. That's where we go wrong. But this can be seen, and once seen, the whole picture is different. But words fail at this point. It's not even exactly like, it's not like suddenly things look different, you know, something like that. But the understanding is radically different. Yeah. So I don't know, does that?
Yes, thank you very
okay,
much.
Yeah. Yeah, Roger.
Well, let's see if I heard you right. A while back, I was interested when you said something like, don't ask why here, it's not useful.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah.
And so, in a kind of a broad way, then, would you say that's in, with regard to Zen, don't ask why?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just a matter of, it's just a matter of seeing, realizing, direct realization, and no explanation. You know, and like I was using that in terms of like, why do I sit? You know, if I don't know if anybody's really asked me this in a long time anyway, but say if someone were to ask me why do I sit meditation, and I realized long ago, decades ago now, but at some point where I caught myself saying something. And realizing that doesn't even touch it, you know? And I realize, and it isn't like I don't know. I say I, because language requires it. English, I have to say I there, but there's this knowledge. It's direct. It's sort of like, well, do you want to live out of confusion or do you want to set all that down, you know? And I say something like that, yeah, but still, that's, you know, whatever I say, you know. And we can learn to just not really ask why. We can ask why in small details. You know, you're cooking something or other, and then you say, well, just put in this little spice here, and if I say why, and say, well, you can say, well, it tastes better. You know, I mean, we can have our little questions and then our little answers, you know, and that's perfectly fine. But when it comes to what is going on here and that sort of thing, it's not very helpful at all. Yeah.
I'm sorry, I'm going to quote the Shin Ching Ming directly here. Please forgive me.
No, it's okay.
It says, forget the why of things when there can be no measuring or comparing.
There you go.
I'm sorry.
No. Yes, I know you do. Yeah. Well, there you go, right there. Yeah. Forget the why of things when there can be no measuring or comparing. Yeah. Well, we've just about used the hour. I don't see any other hands here now, so thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening. To hear more talks on Buddhism, Zen, and related topics, visit dharmafield.org.